Can Satan, can demons make themselves visible to the human eye? Can they appear as human beings? And you wouldn't even know that they are actually demons. Can they manifest themselves? Next question. How can you protect yourselves against Satan and his demons, against the possibility that they are going to directly influence you and take possession of your life? What kind of activities should you definitely avoid so that you do not come in contact with them? And there are many more questions I'm going to touch upon today. But to begin this sermon with kind of an introduction, let us look at the time when Satan was created. Now, Satan didn't always exist. He first was Lucifer, as we call him, but Lucifer didn't always exist either. God created him. How is he described when he was created? Does the Bible tell us anything about him? Does the Bible tell us what kind of a being he is? Well, there are certain scriptures we should all be familiar with, but I'd like to turn quickly to the book of Isaiah, Isaiah 14, and just looking at verse 12. Isaiah 14 and verse 12, and here I'm reading from the New King James Bible mainly. It says, "How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning?" Now, Lucifer is a Latin word, a translation of the Hebrew word, which means pretty much morning star or light bringer. Where it says here, Lucifer, son of the morning, a better translation is morning star, as the NIV has it. It's better because Lucifer, or Satan, was one of the high-ranking angels who are referred to as morning stars in the Bible. And you can look at this later in Job chapter 38 and verse 7, where God says that when he created the earth, the morning stars sang together. And then he talks about the angels shouting for joy. Now that was long before there was any human being. So Lucifer was one of those morning stars, light bringers. He's also referred to in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 28. So sometimes people ask the question, did God create a devil? The answer is no. God created a morning star, a high-ranking light bringer, who decided to become the devil. In Ezekiel 28 and in verse 14, we read, "You were an, or the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God." So he was up there in heaven. "You walked back and forth in the midst of fiery stones." He was a cherub. Now we will look into what a cherub is pretty soon. But how did he become Satan? Verse 17 of Ezekiel 28. "Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor." So he was a beautiful light bringer, so to speak. A very high-ranking angel called a cherub. But he decided to become proud because he was so beautifully created. And then he turned to become God's enemy, which he is still today. So again, the Bible here in the book of Ezekiel describes Lucifer as a cherub. Now, let's look at other scriptures telling us how cherubs or cherubim look like. And it's again the book of Ezekiel, same book here, which describes how cherubim look like. Ezekiel chapter 1 and verse 5. Now people say that they have seen Satan. Have they seen Satan in the way cherubs are described here? And remember now, Lucifer was created as a cherub. Ezekiel 1 and verse 5. From within it came the likeness of four living creatures. Remember, Satan or Lucifer was a created being, and here we are talking about four living creatures, four living created beings. And this was the appearance. They had the likeness of a man, but each one had four faces, each one had four wings. And their legs were straight, verse 7, and the soles of their feet were like the soles of calves' feet, or better translated, the feet of oxen. And they sparkled like the color of burnished bronze. Verse 10. And as for the likeness of their faces, each had the face of a man, each had the face of each of the four had the face of a lion. On the right side, each of the four had the face of an ox. On the left side, and each of the four had the face of an eagle. So here are creatures. They had faces, four faces, depending on how you looked at them. And so they had the face of a man on the one side, and you looked at from a different angle, face of a lion, face of an ox, face of an eagle. Now, if you turn to Ezekiel 10, you'll find that these creatures are, in fact, four cherubim. In Ezekiel chapter 10 and verse 20, and we have also read that his body, or the body of those four creatures, was more like the body of a human being. But they had these four peculiar-looking faces. In Ezekiel chapter 10, and let's look at verse 20. This is a living creature I saw under the God of Israel by the river Chebar, and I knew they were cherubim. Each one had four faces, and each one had four wings, and the likeness of the hands of a man was under their wings. And the likeness of their faces was the same as the faces which I had seen by the river Chebar. In other words, these were four cherubim. Let's go back to verse 12. Of Ezekiel 10, and here we have a more detailed description. It says, and the whole body, with their back, their hands, their wings, and the wheels that the four had, were full of eyes all around. And now verse 14, and each one had four faces. Now we find the same description again, with one distinction. It says, the first face was a face of a cherub, and the second face, the face of a man. And the third, the face of a lion. And the fourth, the face of an eagle. So in this description, the ox isn't mentioned, and the cherub is mentioned instead, showing that the predominant feature of the face of a cherub is that of an ox. But also he had... And all four of those had the body, so to speak, in this vision of a man. So we don't see here that those cherubs had the body of an animal. Not in this description. But we find a different one in Revelation chapter 4. And let's look at verse 5 and 6 and 7 and 8. Here John sees God's throne in heaven in a vision, but he sees something which is at that throne. And from the throne proceeded lightnings, thunderings, voices, and there were seven lamps of fire burning before the throne, which are the seven spirits of God. Now these are other angelic beings. Verse 6, and before the throne there was a sea of glass like crystal, and in the midst of the throne and around the throne were four living creatures full of eyes, in front and in back. That's similar to what we had just read in the book of Ezekiel. Verse 7. The first living creature was like a lion. The second living creature like a calf, or better translated, ox. The third living creature had a face like a man. And the fourth living creature was like a flying eagle. So here the same characteristics are described, but in this case, these angelic beings actually look more like creatures with animal bodies, if you please. Now, there's another category of angels described. It's only described in the book of Isaiah, Isaiah chapter 6, and let's look at verse 2. Here Isaiah has a vision, and he saw God and angelic beings in that vision. And above it stood seraphim. Each one had 6 wings. Now, the other ones we just talked about, they had 4 wings. These one have 6 wings. With 2, he covered his face. With 2, he covered his feet. And with 2, he flew. Now, there is no further description as to how these seraphim look. But there are 2 references in the book of Isaiah where the word is used. See, the word seraphim is a plural of seraph in the Hebrew. And the meaning of seraph and then seraphim is serpent or dragon. Isaiah chapter 14 and at verse 29. It says, "Do not rejoice, all you of Philistia, because the rod that struck you is broken. For out of the serpent's roots will come forth a viper, and its offspring will be a fiery flying serpent." A fiery flying serpent. The word here is seraph. The plural word would be seraphim. And another reference is in Isaiah chapter 30. So again, here Isaiah introduces us to seraphims and then talks in 2 other places about something as a parallel description of what a seraphim might look like. So we have Isaiah chapter 30 and in verse 6, the burden against the beasts of the south. Through a land of trouble and anguish from which come the lioness and lion, the viper and fiery flying serpent. They will carry their riches on the backs of young donkeys and their treasures on the humps of camels to a people who shall not benefit them. Again, fiery flying serpent. The same word is used. Seraph, plural seraphim. The meaning is, and you can check that in any commentary or in any dictionary, a burning, fiery, stinging serpent. So that's how these seraphim are kind of associated with a fiery, burning serpent. Now, remember, Satan was described as a cherub, Lucifer, who became Satan, a cherub. But he's also described in the Bible many times as a serpent, as a dragon. In fact, a fiery red dragon. A fiery red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns. Look at Revelation chapter 12 and in verse 3. It says, "Another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns." Verse 4. "His tail," so he has a tail apparently in this description, "drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth." We understand that to mean that he was over 1/3 of God's created angels who followed Satan, became demons. And so he and those demons rebelled against God, trying to throw him off his throne, went up to heaven from earth, and were thrown back to earth. But here is just what I want to emphasize, the way Satan is described. And then again in verse 9. "So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. And he was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." And so, time and again, Satan is referred to as that great red fiery dragon, that serpent of old. You know that the serpent deceived Eve. And then, of course, the serpent was punished by God. Now, the question always has been, what did Eve see? Did Eve see Satan as the serpent in his real appearance? Is that possible? Or did she just see an ordinary serpent and Satan spoke through that serpent to Eve? Or did Eve see anything? We'll come back to that. But let's make clear and sure we understand how Satan is described today. He's no longer that bright morning star. He is no longer the light bringer at all. Notice in Ephesians chapter 6, Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 12, it says, we do not wrestle against flesh and blood. In other words, not against other human beings. At least that's what we shouldn't, which means we shouldn't participate in any war against other human beings either. But we do wrestle. We do fight. Against whom are we fighting? We are fighting against principalities. We are fighting against powers. We are fighting against the rulers of the darkness of this age. We are fighting against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places, in high places, high authorities. Do we fight against those wicked, evil spirits? When we go to Luke chapter 22, Christ makes the very foundational statement that this world is the world of Satan today. It's not God's world. God isn't ruling this world. We have already seen that Satan deceives the whole world. And now look what Christ is saying in Luke in chapter 22 and in verse 53. That is when he was arrested and then later tried and murdered. He says, when I was with you daily in the temple, you didn't try to seize me. See, God wouldn't allow it then. But this is your hour and the power of darkness. Satan was now in complete control. Of course, God allowed it for a purpose. We understand that. But this was now the power of darkness in action. But you see, 2 Corinthians chapter 11 tells us something different. In that, Satan doesn't appear to most people as the power of darkness. When people see Satan, and I will explain what I mean by that, they don't see him as the one who deceives them. They don't see him as the evil power of darkness. Look how they are going to perceive him. 2 Corinthians 11 and in verse 14, Paul says, no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Satan appears as an angel of light to the people. His festivals are festivals of light, aren't they? Christmas. Beautiful. Beautiful lights. Easter. Beautiful Easter eggs. And all the things associated with them. You know, people would not follow Satan if they would know, at least most people wouldn't, what Satan is all about. So he appears as an angel of light, and that's how he deceives humans. Makes it appealing to them, makes it interesting to them. That's why we'll talk about some activities which sound very interesting and which are extremely dangerous. But you know, can a human being see Satan in his real and true appearance? Can Satan, can demons materialize themselves so that they can perhaps appear in a different way? Or do you have to be a spirit being in order to see Satan and his demons, who are spirit beings? Now, Christ proved that he was the Son of God in many different ways. But here's one scripture in Luke chapter 10, where he made very clear that he was alive long before he became a human being. And in Luke chapter 10 and in verse 18, he tells his disciples this. He said to them, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. Christ, when he was that immortal God being, could see Satan, of course, as another spirit being. And he was there when Satan tried to knock God off his throne, and when he was thrown down from heaven to this earth. And Christ says, I saw that. I was there. And Satan fell down like lightning from heaven. But what about when Christ was here on this earth as a human being? Was he then able to see Satan? Now, we all know about the temptation of Christ in the wilderness. What we don't read, if you read that record very carefully, is that Christ saw him. What you read is that Satan spoke to him. What you read is that Satan even transported him from one place to another. But you don't see and you don't read that Christ saw him. As you don't read that Eve saw Satan. And as I will show you in a moment, they couldn't have. And there's a reason for that. Because can Satan materialize himself like angels can? We know that angels can do that. Let's turn with me to Hebrews chapter 13. God's holy and righteous angels can appear like human beings, and you wouldn't even know that they are angels. Now, you might have had experiences with human beings who were angels, and you wouldn't know it. I don't want to say too much, but I am almost convinced, and I emphasize the word almost, because I cannot be 100% sure of that, that we did have an encounter with an angel when we were stranded on a freeway, and we got help, and the mysterious events happening were quite remarkable. But the point is, let's look at Hebrews 13 and verse 2, where Paul is saying this. Hebrews 13 and verse 2, do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing some have unwittingly entertained angels. So yes, God's angels can appear as human beings. Many scriptures in the Bible show that. I mean, they appear together with Christ to Abraham as two men, and then they went to Sodom as two men. And it's not clear that even Abraham knew right away that this was God, Jesus Christ, and angels, but those people in Sodom certainly didn't realize them to be angels. But the question is, when Satan became Satan, when demons became demons, did God take away from them the power, the ability to materialize themselves as human beings? And the next question is, can you see Satan, can you see demons in their real form and shape, so to speak? Now let's look at an interesting passage in the book of Mark, chapter 6, and beginning in verse 47. Now when evening came, the boat was in the middle of the sea, and the disciples were in that boat, and he, Christ, was alone on the land. And then he saw them straining at rowing, for the wind was against them. And about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them, walking on the sea, and would have passed them by. But when they saw him walking on the sea, now you get a picture of that scenario. So here is Christ walking on the sea. It was very windy. And so these disciples, they were in the boat. So they saw something, right? They saw him walking on the sea. They supposed it was a ghost, as the New King James Bible says it, and cried out. For they all saw him and were troubled. And immediately he talked with them and said to them, be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid. Now, this is not the best translation here. If you look at the authorized version, the old King James Bible, it doesn't say they supposed it was a ghost. It translates, they supposed it was a spirit. Now, what it really was an apparition. The Greek word is phantasma, where the word fantastic comes from, and it means an apparition. And then when it says they were troubled, That's a weak translation too. It's better translated as they were terrified, as for instance the NIV has it. So they were terrified when they saw this, what they thought was an apparition. And Christ says, oh, don't be terrified, it's me. Why would they be terrified? What did they think they saw? You can look later at the parallel passage in Matthew chapter 14 and verse 26, which gives you the same meaning. And that's the only two times where this word phantasma is used in the entire New Testament. But there's another passage where something similar is happening, and that's in Luke chapter 24. In Luke 24, this is after Christ was resurrected, and he appears to his disciples, beginning in verse 36. Now, as they said these things, Jesus himself stood in the midst of them and said to them, peace to you. But they were terrified and frightened and supposed they had seen a spirit. And here, the word in the Greek is pneuma, P-N-E-U-M-A. So they now thought they saw a spirit. And he said to them, why are you troubled? Or as the Living Bible has, why are you frightened? And why do doubts arise in your hearts? Verse 39. Behold my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Handle me and see, for a spirit does not have flesh and bones, as you see I have. And when he had said this, he showed him his hands and his feet. And while they still didn't believe for joy and marveled, he said to them, have you any food here? And they gave him a piece of broiled fish, some honeycomb, and he took it and ate it in their presence. Now I dare to say, this is probably one of the most misunderstood scriptures in the entire Bible. And people have come up with all kinds of ideas what that would mean. And people have claimed that this means that Christ was resurrected with a physical body. Because he says, doesn't he? I have flesh and bone. It doesn't mean anything of the kind. What Christ is pointing out is that he was not a demon, a spirit. Because a spirit cannot materialize himself. He cannot appear as a human being with flesh and bone. Notice the word spirit, which is applied to demons very clearly in the Bible, in many different places. Just look at Matthew chapter 8. So the disciples, remember now, they thought they saw a spirit. And Christ says, well, a spirit doesn't have flesh and bone, like I have. But notice Matthew chapter 8 and verse 16. It says, when evening had come, they brought to him many who were demon-possessed, and he cast out the spirits, same word, with the word. And many other scriptures refer the word pneuma to a spirit, a demon. Christ was not resurrected with a physical body at all. But what the scripture shows is that he was able to manifest himself again, like he was able to manifest before he was a human being, to the human eye. But a demon cannot do that. Now, I will show you, though, what a demon can do. But in this case, he makes this point very clear. See, Christ was not resurrected with a physical body. He was not resurrected with a body having flesh and bone. Notice how he was resurrected. 1 Corinthians 15. So all these ideas floating around in so-called Christianity, that Christ was somehow resurrected with a physical body, and then they're talking about bodily resurrection, it's nonsense! It is a total wrong, blasphemous teaching. Notice 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 44. It is sown a natural body. That's what you and I have today. It is raised what? Another natural physical body? No, a spiritual body. A body consisting of spirit. There is a natural body. And there is a spiritual body. He goes on to say in verse 45, and so it is written, The first man, Adam, became a living being, better, a living soul. You know, God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, it says, and he became a living soul. Bible nowhere teaches about immortal souls. He was a dead soul, and then God put the breath of life into him, and then he was a living soul as long as he was alive. And when he died, he was again a dead soul. So the first Adam became a living soul. The last Adam, a reference to Christ, became what? A living or life-giving spirit. So he was no longer a physical being with a physical body, which is somehow the way it is explained, is kind of made incorruptible, but it's still a physical body. I mean, it makes no sense, the whole thing. Now, let's also go on to say, to see what Paul also says in verse 50. Because we know that Christ is in the kingdom of God today. Kingdom of God is a family of God, and so Christ is a second member of the God family. But, now I say this, brethren, verse 50, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. So if Christ was resurrected as a flesh and blood being, he wouldn't be in the kingdom of God. He says, nor does corruption inherit incorruption. The point is, he was changed. When he was resurrected, he was resurrected as a spiritual, immortal God being. The point Christ is making here, I am not a demon. Don't be afraid. Don't be terrified, because a demon cannot materialize himself like I am right now. That's the point he was trying to make. But I want to show you what demons can do. And when I ask the question, have you seen Satan? Have you seen demons? That is where it's becoming problematic. Because they can create illusions. They can create something which looks very real. And a good explanation of that is in the book of Job, chapter 4. Job, chapter 4. And let's start reading in verse 12. Here is Eliphaz, one of Job's friends, quote-unquote. And he was there to, quote-unquote, comfort Job, but all he did was he put more oil in the fire. And so he explains what has happened to him. Job 4 and verse 12. Now a word was secretly brought to me, and my ear received a whisper of it. In disquieting thoughts from the visions of the night, when deep sleep falls on men, fear came upon me and trembling, which made all my bones shake. Then a spirit passed before my face. The hair on my body stood up. It stood still, but I could not discern its appearance. A form was before my eyes. There was silence. And then I heard a voice saying, and then some demonic teaching is being brought forth. Now, the Living Bible says, I felt the Spirit's presence, but couldn't see it standing there. That's a bit better translated. My inspired margin from the Ambassador College days has this to say, demon, a disembodied spirit which cannot appear as a person. So what I'm telling you today is nothing new. That's what the church has always taught and believed and understood. Demons cannot materialize themselves. Eliphaz didn't see any being. He saw something. He saw, if you please, an apparition, something which was shaky, nebulous. He was very afraid. And, of course, he was engaging with this demon. Big mistake. You know, demons can use human beings, and they can speak through human beings to others. They can use mediums. They can actually pretend as if they are the ghost, the departed ghost of a loved one. So people go to mediums, want to talk to the ghost of a loved one. And unless the medium is a fraud, in many cases the medium is a fraud, but sometimes it's not a fraud. And sometimes the medium does see something or thinks he or she, mainly she, sees something and then passes it on. And it sounds like, oh, here, the ghost of the departed loved one is speaking to me because what I'm being told only he or she could know, but not realizing that what she is talking to is not the ghost of the departed loved one, it's a demon who was around, of course, when the loved one lived and died. We have a good example of a so-called seance in 1 Samuel chapter 28. And people are intrigued by the concept to go to a medium or participate in a seance because that is interesting, right? To delve into this kind of occult mysticism and to make contact with the netherworld, the underworld, the whatever world they're looking at. In 1 Samuel chapter 28 and verse 3, it says Samuel had died. And all Israel had lamented for him and buried him in Ramah in his own city. And Saul, King Saul, had put the mediums and the spiritists out of the land. Now, the New King James Bible consistently uses the word medium. The Authorized Version consistently says those who have familiar spirits. So, putting these two together, a medium is somebody who has a familiar spirit. A spirit which wants to familiarize himself with you. That's why it's so dangerous to get involved in this kind of stuff. Verse 4. The Philistines gathered together and came and encamped at Shunem, and Saul gathered all Israel together, and they encamped at Gilboa. And when Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid. His heart trembled greatly. And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams or by Urim or by the prophets. Now, remember this. God would not answer Saul through prophets. And then, of course, he's inquiring, is there anybody who is still a medium? And again, in the Authorized Version, it always says somebody who has a familiar spirit. And then they find out there is somebody there, a witch in Endor. Look at verse 8. So Saul disguised himself and put on other clothes, and he went and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. And he said, please conduct a seance for me and bring up for me the one I shall name to you. And the woman said to him, look, you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums, those who have familiar spirits, and the spiritists from the land. And of course then, Saul is telling her, well, it's okay, I won't do anything to you, bring up Samuel for me. Not Samuel, who had died, remember? Verse 12. And when the woman saw Samuel, notice when the woman saw, what she saw it was Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman spoke to Saul, saying, why have you deceived me? For you are Saul. And the king said to her, do not be afraid. What did you see? Notice, Saul saw nothing. It was a woman who apparently thought that she saw something in this vision during this seance. What did you see? Saul is asking. And the woman said to Saul, I saw a who? I saw a spirit ascending out of the earth. And so he said to her, what is his form? How do you look like? And she said, an old man is coming up and he is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it says here, was Samuel, but the word was is not in the original. So you could also say, Saul perceived that it appeared to be Samuel. We know it's not Samuel. We can say that dogmatically, that it wasn't Samuel. Why? Well, because Samuel died. So this was a seance. You really believe that God would have used now Samuel in this context of a seance through a witch to give him word as to what happened, because this demon tells this woman what would happen to Saul, and in fact it would come to pass. And Samuel was a prophet. And God said he is not answering Saul any longer through prophets. This was a demon pretending to be the ghost of Samuel. It was a typical case of a seance. And we also read in other passages that God killed Saul for that, because Saul went to a witch having a seance and trying to find out the future. By the way, if you want to look at this, in 1 Samuel chapter 3, verses 19 and 20, you read that Samuel was a prophet. And you also find this in Acts chapter 13 and in verse 20. So there's no way in the world that God would have used the ghost of Samuel, if something like that would even exist, to give Saul an answer, because, you know, he was in his grave, he was dead. And he wouldn't be alive until the first resurrection. But people are deceived. And people conduct seances because they think they can communicate with the ghosts of their loved ones. And what they are doing is they are getting in communication with demons. But what is being described here is an explanation for some of these visions, quote unquote. When young kids, young girls, young boys see suddenly the Virgin Mary appear to them. Famous example of Fatima, and where messages were given, and they saw this Virgin Mary. Now, the real Virgin Mary is dead and in the grave. And even the concept of Virgin Mary, I mean, Mary was a virgin when she conceived Christ, but she wasn't a virgin afterwards because she had other children. So what is happening if that is not a fraud to begin with, or if there's not another explanation for it, which I will address a little bit later today? It would have been a demonic apparition. And in many cases, when these things are happening, it is of demonic origin. And most people don't understand that. Most people don't understand that. My mother told me once, when she was in a very young age, naive, as we all are when we are in a young age, she participated in a seance once. Only once. And I asked her what happened. She said, well, it actually worked. I mean, the table moved. I said, well, that was fraud, right? That was just fake. No, she said, absolutely it wasn't. And we were all so afraid, we all ran out of that room, totally terrified. Sometimes these things do happen, but they are not godly in any way. You see, when there are pictures which allegedly portray Satan, that's not the way Satan looks. That's why I took the time to show you from the Bible how Satan looks. You don't see any pictures necessarily in visions people have about Satan depicting him in the way the Bible describes him. But let me also say that when it comes to Satan today, he is the most evil, the most wicked, the most terrible individual alive. And with that terrible character he has, that hateful being he is, his outward appearance would picture that hatred. He is probably, if you were able to see him, the most despicable looking individual today. Not that his form necessarily has changed, but his whole appearance. Even today, when you are full of hate and people are full of hate and anger, you know, their face expresses that. They're not necessarily nice looking people at that moment. And now you think of a being billion times more hateful than any human being has ever been. And so he is certainly not a sight to behold today. But people can, of course, perceive Satan's influence and the influence of a demon, like this Eliphaz guy did, thinking, oh, it was just great to have these kind of ideas and concepts. I'd like to read to you very briefly from our booklet, Angels, Demons, and the Spirit World, Part 2, The World of Demons. And the headline is The Power of Satan and His Demons, and I'll just give you a very few excerpts from it. We say in here, we must not underestimate the power and influence of Satan and his demons. Satan and his demons can show great signs and wonders. Satan has the power to inspire people to go to war. And then we have several scriptures, which I don't quote right now. He has the power to throw down fire to consume man and beast. As a prince of the power of the air, he can bring destruction through mighty winds, hurricanes, tornadoes. We go on to say that though many people don't believe in the existence of Satan and demons, they are quick to dabble in the occult, being ignorant of the danger therein. Demons are called familiar spirits because they want to familiarize themselves with men. Haunted houses, poltergeists, seances, communication with the dead, contacts with quote-unquote aliens are all clearly of demonic origin. And once we have made contact with demons, we cannot get rid of them anymore, barring a miracle from God. And I've had several reports, let's say, from people who have written me, telling me about those contacts. Terrible. It's terrible. One guy wrote me, and a little bit later he wrote me another memo, and it was like difference between day and night. And I said to my wife, there's something wrong with this guy. And then I got another positive memo, another negative memo, another positive, and so on. And then finally I wrote him and said, well, what is your name? Of course, I asked that question on purpose. I knew what his quote-unquote human name was. I was getting at something else. And he wrote me back and says, oh, I know you know that I am plagued by many demons, but they don't have any control over me. Well, that gave me the answer on that one. You know, it is foolish to, let's say, go to a house which you are being told is haunted, just so you to find out is there something going on. I was reading a report from a very famous journalist and writer. And he went to a quote-unquote haunted house, thinking, oh, well, nothing to it. And then he later wrote down that for weeks he felt a presence. He felt something was haunting him. It's foolish to do something like that. We say in our booklet, Satan and demons have the power to transport a human being from one place to another. And this explains strange encounters with UFOs, where quote-unquote abducted people are sometimes found hundreds of miles away from their residence without knowing how they got there. Sorcery, witchcraft, hypnosis, certain meditation practices are further methods of Satan to overpower the mind of a human being and to make him or her into a helpless victim. Whenever we give ourselves over to another influence, we have become victims of the powers of darkness. You see, we read in the Old Testament that sorcerers in Egypt were even able to change rods into serpents. Sorcerers did that. In fact, those serpents in the Hebrew meant dragons. These were huge creatures. And remember this story when Moses and Aaron were there in front of Pharaoh. Demons are extremely powerful. We read that Satan transported Christ in the desert from one place to another, took him to the pinnacle of the temple, and said, you know, throw yourself down. That wasn't just a vision. That wouldn't have been a temptation if it was just a vision. That was real. But as I said, you don't read that Satan made himself visible to Christ because he can't. He can't materialize himself. But Christ most certainly knew that Satan was there. And Eve most certainly knew that something was speaking to her. Now, maybe it was just a literal serpent and Satan spoke to Eve through that serpent. That's possible. But he wouldn't have appeared as the way he is to Eve. It's very important that we don't try to get involved in these kind of things. Notice in Leviticus, the warnings in the Bible are throughout. And God wouldn't give us those warnings if they would be meaningless. Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 31. Leviticus 19 and verse 31. It says, give no regard to mediums and familiar spirits. Now the Authorized Version says, to those who have familiar spirits, neither seek after visits. It goes on to say, do not seek after them to be defiled by them. Of course you will be defiled by them because you will get into an influence which is totally against what God is wanting you to be. Deuteronomy chapter 5. Deuteronomy chapter 5. Now let me just tell you that I am not anywhere near to an end of this sermon, so we go a little bit over time today. Very unusual that I would do that, but today I probably won't. Will. Deuteronomy chapter 18. Deuteronomy chapter 18. Did I say Deuteronomy chapter 5? I meant Deuteronomy chapter 18 and in verse 9. Deuteronomy 18:9. When you come into the land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not learn to follow the abominations of those nations. And today, the United States of America, Great Britain, New Zealand, Canada, you name it, Europe, full of these kind of abominations. It says, verse 10, there shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or his daughter pass through the fire, or one who practices witchcraft, or a soothsayer, or one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer, verse 11, or one who conjures spells, or a medium, or a spiritist, or one who calls up the dead. Now, other translations, the Authorized Version has, a consulter with familiar spirits. And when it says who calls up the dead, the word is necromancer, which means somebody who pretends as if he could do that, not that he in fact can do it. But what he does is he speaks to demons. And we got to understand that. And so notice Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 19. Isaiah 8 and verse 19. When they say to you, let's go to this lady over there and let's have a seance and let's find out what my future holds. Or let's try to make contact with one of my departed loved ones. When they say to you, seek those who are mediums and wizards. Authorized Version again. Seek those who have familiar spirits, who whisper and mutter. Should not a people seek their God? Should they seek the dead on behalf of the living? Should they even try to do this? And of course, the obvious answer is no, they shouldn't. And in Isaiah chapter 29 and verse 4, we have another warning. Isaiah 29 and verse 4. You shall be brought down, you shall speak out of the ground, your speech shall be low out of the dust, your voice shall be like a medium's out of the ground. Again, if you have the Authorized Version, it says, as one who has a familiar spirit. In other words, it is the familiar spirit which speaks through the medium. It has nothing to do with ghosts of departed ones. And that is important for us to understand. We are not supposed to get involved in these demonic things. We should not watch demonic movies. Now, I'm talking about real demonic movies. We got to have a balanced approach. Somebody recently wrote me and says, oh, watching the latest Star Wars, oh, that is demonic, that is sin, that is idolatry. And I wrote him back, well, look, we in God's church have a mind which is of a balanced approach. I mean, we are not getting all kinds of radicalized one way or the other. That's just nonsense. I'm talking about demonic movies. I remember one time I was still a young boy, didn't know too much about the tours, actually knew nothing about it. There was a movie I watched with my brother. It was called Rosemary's Baby. You might have heard of it. It was one done by Roman Polanski. Maya Farrow played the lady who was married by that time to Frank Sinatra. And in that movie, she had sexual intercourse with a demon. And then, of course, the baby, Rosemary's baby, you know, became obviously a very evil person. Now, that movie haunted me for quite a while. It was, of course, very realistically done. And it's something I should have never watched. I didn't know any better at the time. But you see, the whole concept is totally demonic. Demons cannot materialize. Demons cannot have sexual intercourse with women. Now, there are some, or even many, who believe that they can. They believe that they did. They believe that demons, fallen angels, had intercourse with women at the time of Noah. And then giants came out of it. And they base that on this terrible book of Enoch, which is a collection of Hebrew mythological nonsense, where this is kind of depicted. It's all demonic, you see? But people believe that. And based on this wrong belief, they are teaching today that Antichrist will actually be either a demon or will be the product of a sexual relationship between a demon and a woman. That's how far it has already gotten. Now, let's stay away from this nonsense. Let's not watch demonic movies. Let's not get involved in demonic video games. Well, certainly, let's not get involved in seances. Let's not get involved in Ouija board games. Now, when I was in Germany, I think my wife was with me. I'm not sure whether Mrs. Adair was with me or not. We went to a toy store. Were you there, actually? Okay, so she was there. So we went to this toy store. We wanted to buy a toy for, I believe, one of your grandchildren or something. And so we go through this, what they had offered, and suddenly I see these Ouija boards for kids. And in German, it's called Hexenbretter, but sometimes it's called Witchboard. And I called them to me and said, look at this. And there are these inscriptions here, and it's extremely clearly pictured as to what to do. Now, the human mind, they read that, that's nonsense. Nothing will ever come out of it, right? Well, I've talked to people who said they have done it, and it has worked, but it's frightening. And there's definitely a different force involved. Because humanly, you cannot explain it. But it is happening. And so, in a toy store, young kids are being offered that kind of stuff. There is another popular game right now, I'm told. It's called Charlie Charlie. And the idea is like that, you know, some objects may move, like pencils or whatever. I don't know whether they do move or not. But it's apparently popular, and many in the schools actually play it. But if you go back to the history, the background, Charlie Charlie allegedly is a Mexican demon. So that's already enough for me to say, stay away from this stuff. Don't even try to figure out whether it's working or not. Because what if it's working? What if it is working? Transcendental meditation and other Far Eastern transcendental meditation mythologies. Now, I know a lot about transcendental meditation. That's the one which Maharishi Mahesh Yogi made very popular. Actually, the Beatles made it very popular, and they brought him over there to Germany and England and the United States. You know, they give it a very scientific mantle, but people are getting a mantra, as they are called. It's an Indian word. And then they are told you cannot speak this word anymore at all, but you got to meditate on this word. That's all you do. You meditate on this word. And you meditate 50 minutes in the morning and 50 minutes in the evening, and sometimes, of course, you meditate longer, and some meditate 5-6 hours a day. Just thinking of that word. And things are happening. And I've talked to a lot of people who have been doing this, and they have admitted to me that they feel definitely a demonic presence. Some guy told me, well, I've been followed by something, and I don't know what it is. Well, it shouldn't surprise us when we look into what transcendental meditation is all about. The mantra is the name of an Indian god. And in Hinduism, the gods are both good and evil. So you keep calling the name of this god, and after a while, that god appears, except it's not a god, it's a demon. And then, as the very famous German author Wolfgang von Goethe once wrote, it's probably something like the German Shakespeare, and first I say it in German, die Geister, die ich rief, die werde ich nicht mehr los, in English, the spirits I called upon, I can't get rid of anymore. And that is very true. It is so true. And people who have been doing this transcendental meditation stuff or other Far Eastern meditation methods have gotten themselves into a relationship, unknowingly, many times, with demons. And now they are wondering, why are things so bad? Well, as I said, you don't want to go to a haunted house if you know, allegedly, there is a ghost living in this house. You don't want to go to Halloween parties when you know that Halloween is clearly and admittedly a festival for Satan. I mean, everybody can tell you that. It was created as a festival for Satan. The whole idea is like it's around this time when the earth opens up and those ghosts from the underworld have now access to you. And so you are having, you know, goods to give to them to appease them. Today it's a trick-or-treat concept. Same thing. Why would we want to be involved in something like that? But it goes a lot more difficult and perhaps not that obvious. I have an article here written by John Amorelli. It was published in Update 606, entitled Out of Darkness. Now, of course, John Amorelli is a licensed massage therapist. And that's what he wrote. Years ago, before I was called into the truth, I was interested in a course called Reiki. Dr. Mikao Usui, also known as Usui Sensei in Japan, is a founder of the Reiki system and drew his inspiration from Buddha. He was a monk, and it is believed that he made a pilgrimage to the top of a mountain outside of Japan, where he fasted and meditated for 21 days. There he had a spectacular epiphany experience, receiving visions of five symbols, which are taught in Reiki classes today. In these visions, he was allegedly shown how to activate energy and give the gift of Reiki, the healing, by laying on of hands without actually touching the person. He then came down from the mountain and purportedly performed miraculous healings. When I learned of all of this, I decided that Reiki was out of my resume and out of my life. When someone asked me if I teach and practice Reiki, I simply smile and say emphatically, no. I will not call on any demons claiming to be the dead spirits of Usui and other deceased Reiki proponents and followers. I will not use the five symbols above the client's head to activate energy. But the question for all of you who go to chiropractors is this. First of all, do you know what the chiropractor does? First question you should ask him or her, are you practicing Reiki? And if the answer is yes, you find another chiropractor. But even if the person says, no, I don't, you watch what the person does. And if the person does this hocus pocus by, you know, putting your hands over you without touching you, you know that person is practicing Reiki. And you get out of there. You get out of there in a hurry. Now, we have mentioned several times hypnosis. And right now, in the medical field in particular, hypnosis is such a great thing which people and even doctors recommend. Well, we have an update, number 695, where Brian Gale wrote an article on should a Christian use hypnosis. Now, first I'd like to read a few excerpts from this article, and then I will go into another one. He says, the free dictionary online gives this definition of hypnosis. The induction of a state of consciousness in which a person apparently loses the power of voluntary action is highly responsive to suggestion or direction. Another definition says hypnosis is a process by which critical thinking is diminished. Later on in the article it says, willingly inviting outside influences into our minds is a dangerous thing to do. When hypnotism is taking place, the hypnotist is able to change the behavior of the one who is hypnotized. For example, those who allow themselves to be hypnotized in an entertainment capacity on stage are subject to some mind control as they do as requested by the hypnotist. And we must never rule out the possibility that the hypnotist is engaging in his conduct through and with the power of Satan or other demonic influence. A hypnotized person later declared, and I can testify to that because I heard this person say this, that a strong force or power had taken over and compelled him to do or not to do certain things. This person told me when he was under hypnosis, he was told, "You don't know your name. You can't say your name." And he couldn't. And I thought, well, of course, he's making a joke. And he said, "No, of course I know my name. But I was prevented from saying it. It was as if a power prevented me from doing it." Now, that should tell us already enough as to what hypnosis is all about. This article goes on to say, "We are to yield wholly, fully, and completely to God and His will, which is perfect. Hypnosis gives away that control to another person or another spiritual entity, such as a demon influencing the hypnotist to use his power. Never, ever allow anyone to take over your mind in any capacity whatsoever, whether it's meditation, whether it's hypnosis, whether it's, you know, being put into a trance, whatever it may be. We are to submit to God, and then He will draw near to us. But submitting to a hypnotist and all the spiritual demonic force using him has a possibility of causing great harm." Now listen to this now. It's a quote from the father of hypnotism, Franz Anton Mesmer. He was a practitioner of the occult. His method of inducing a trance was very similar to the way a medium conducts a seance. Now that is the author of hypnotism. Hypnotism, along with yoga and transcendental meditation, has always been linked to spiritual darkness. The newfound respectability of these practices has not changed their underlying nature. Now, I found an article on the internet. First, I found it in German, and then actually I found the English version as well, on hypnosis. Now, this wasn't written by us, but I want you to understand how others look at hypnosis. Now, of course, this is written from a Christian viewpoint, but listen to this carefully. Hypnosis is nothing new. It has been used for thousands of years by witch doctors, spirit mediums, Hindus, Buddhists, and yogis. No one knows exactly how hypnosis works, other than the obvious placebo effect, the successful use of false feedback in the same manner that feedback is used in occult techniques. But compounding the word hypnosis with the word therapy does not lift the practice from the occult to the scientific. Trances brought about through medical doctors are not significantly different from occultic hypnosis. In their text on hypnosis, which is used in medical schools, two well-known researchers state categorically, "The reader should not be confused to be supposed or by the supposed differences between hypnosis, Zen, yoga, and other Eastern healing methodologies. Although the rituals for each differs, they are fundamentally the same." E. Fowler Torre, a research psychiatrist, aligns hypnotic techniques with witchcraft. Later on it says, "Just because hypnosis is used by medical doctors doesn't mean that it is free of its occult nature. More and more medical practitioners are being influenced by ancient occult medical practices. The holistic healing movement has successfully wed Western medicine to Eastern mysticism. Goes on to say, a medical doctor teaching a class in self-hypnosis, I didn't even know that something like that existed. Apparently you can hypnotize yourself. Look what the outcome is on that one. Instructed his students to go into a hypnotic trance, leave their bodies, and then go back in to explore various parts of the body. All of this was for the purpose of self-diagnosis or self-diagnosis and self-healing. It goes on to say, under hypnosis administered by psychiatrists, persons who had never had any contact with UFOs can be stimulated to quote-unquote remember UFO abductions that conform in detail to those described by supposed genuine abductees. Hypnosis also leads to spontaneous, quote-unquote, memories of past and future lives, about one-fifth involving existence on other planets. The connection between hypnosis and Eastern mysticism is clear. Hypnosis began as part of the occult and false religion. Hypnosis is demonic. That's what this also is saying. It's demonic at its worst and potentially dangerous at its best. At its worst, it opens an individual to psychic experiences and satanic possession. When mediums go into hypnotic trances and contact the dead, when clairvoyants reveal information which they could not possibly know, when fortune tellers through self-hypnosis reveal the future, Satan is most certainly at work. This also ends with the following comment. Because hypnosis has always been an integral part of the occult, because it is not a science, because of its known harmful effects, and because of its potential for spiritual deception, the wise Christian will completely avoid it, even for medical purposes. It is obvious that hypnosis is lethal if used for evil purposes. However, be content that hypnosis is potentially lethal for whatever purpose it is used. The moment one surrenders himself to the doorway of the occult, even in the halls of science and medicine, he is vulnerable to the powers of darkness. I don't think we could have said it any better. Notice 1 Corinthians 10, the scripture Michael Ling in the sermonette mentioned. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 14. Remember now, Satan, the god of this world, has deceived the whole world. He has established religions which may be looked upon as a counterfeit to true Christianity. Paul is talking about this right here in 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 14. He says, therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. I speak to a wise man, judge for yourselves what I say. The cup of blessing which we bless, it is not the communion of the blood of Christ. And the bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? So he's talking about the Passover here, which only properly baptized members should take once a year. Not every Sunday in communion. Paul is talking about communion right here. Let's see how he continues. Verse 17. For we, being many, are one bread and one body. For we all partake of that same bread, that one bread. Observe Israel after the flesh. Are not those who eat of the sacrifice partakers of the altar? What am I saying then? That an idol is anything, or what is offered to idols is anything? Verse 20. But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons, and not to God. And I do not want you to have fellowship with demons. I never, ever would participate in a Sunday morning communion, taking bread and wine. Never, ever would I do that. Verse 21. Here's what Paul is saying. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the Lord's table and of the table of demons. Or do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he? You know, when Paul wrote these things to the Corinthians, some apparently had already begun to participate in something which looked like the Passover, but which wasn't. And Paul was very strongly condemning that. In Acts chapter 19, We read another interesting episode of people who had been involved in witchcraft, in sorcery, and then they became converted. Look what they did. Acts 19, beginning in verse 18. Many who had believed came confessing and telling their deeds. And many of those who had practiced magic, the NIV says sorcery, the Living Bible says black magic, they brought their books together and they burned them in the sight of all. Why did they do that? They wanted to show we have absolutely nothing further to do with that. They could have sold the books. They said, no way am I going to sell those books because then somebody else would use them. I will burn them, destroy them, so that nobody would have any access to them, because they knew what the consequence would be. So they burned them in the sight of all, and they counted out the value of them, and it totaled 50,000 pieces of silver, quite valuable. They gave it all away. They knew it was the wrong way of life. We have nothing further to do with it. And as a consequence, so the word of the Lord grew mightily and prevailed. James chapter 4 and verse 7. Therefore submit to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Resist him. Have nothing to do with anything which is demonic, even if it sounds perhaps interesting. Have you seen Satan? Have you seen demons? Well, most certainly not in the way they look. Maybe some have seen him in visions, in apparitions. Somebody wrote me that he was sitting in a bus and he saw this man all dressed in gold looking at him, and he thought it was God. And I told him, well, if you actually saw something, it wasn't God at all. But have you seen Satan in operation? Have you seen him doing things and tricking us, perhaps, deceiving us, bringing us closer to him? Well, if we have seen that, we should quickly turn around 180 degrees and walk away from it as quick as we can, and not getting involved. And let them who want to be involved in this, let them do what they want to do, but don't you become part of it. It's a great danger. People who had been doing this kind of stuff, then they receive calls and emails from former friends, and they say, oh, why don't you do this and why don't you do that with me? And when I hear about it, I tell them, no! Tell them no. This goes for other things too, but I mean, I'm just giving this as an example. 1 Peter 5, verse 8. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. Be sober. Be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. He is there to destroy you. Don't make a mistake, but he appears as an angel of light. What does it say? Verse 9. Resist him, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. You're not the only one who has to fight against Satan. We all have to. Every single Christian, every single prospective Christian has to fight against the evil forces of darkness daily. Sometimes we may make wrong decisions. And every time we do, Satan is right there trying to take advantage of us. Let's thank God that Satan and his demons are not any longer able to manifest themselves. I mean, think about that. If suddenly a man or a person comes to you and you don't know, is this really a man or is that a demon? What a terrible situation that would be. No, they cannot do that. But they can create apparitions which may look very real. And of course, they come up with all kinds of ideas that you can, you know, contact those who have died, that you can have communication with aliens, you can get involved in Far Eastern practices, in hypnosis, in seances, in Reiki, whatever. Get away from it. Don't have anything to do with it. Resist Satan, and he will flee from you.